Welcome to episode 198 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live September 25th, 2020. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a different topic or news and how it relates to you. For this episode, Ben and Scott circle back around to some of the announcements from Microsoft Ignite and discuss what they learned tuning into the conference online. Should we warn people what they're in for with today's podcast?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. You're just going to have to listen for 30 minutes and see what we come up with.
Isn't that usually the plan?
Well, I mean, usually we at least have a blog article or two that we have in front of us. This week was Ignite. I've gone through a fair amount of news, but I also have the North American Collaboration Summit next week. So I've been working on sessions for that. And I have some other client work to do. So truth be told, we both sat down this morning and said, we're not prepared to record a podcast at all. So let's just sit down and see where this goes.
I think it's one of those things I miss. I'll tell you, I miss conferences. I miss hugs. Like, those are all very real things.
Well, I will give you a hug, Scott. I'm not afraid to give you a hug if you would really want a hug.
Thanks. I'd have to drive all the way over to your house.
You would.
But I mean, virtual conferences are awesome, right? The volume of information that comes out is great, but the reality of blocking the time and continuing to keep up with them is, it's not there.
Yep.
It doesn't exist. And I would struggle to find the time in the last couple of roles I've been in where I'd be able to get the same amount of dedicated learning time to go to a conference in this environment where you do have other things constantly coming in from the side. And the reality of blocking your calendar to say, I'm at Microsoft Ignite or I'm at PaaS Summit or whatever it happens to be, right? Event that you wanted to go to learn more and gain more knowledge, it's just not there. It's very, very hard to get to. I mean, I have like a big block of time on my calendar blocked out today to go and just catch up on keynotes and things, particularly from like other product areas that, you know, I would have missed because I only got to watch, you know, the big keynote was Satya for the main kickoff and a little bit of the Azure one.
Got it. No, I'm the same way because let's be honest, when you go to a conference in person, we take our laptops, but the amount of time I actually pop open my laptop where people can interrupt me or I have email in my face or even like you said, the whole blocking off your calendar, because you're at home, you're sitting at your desk, your computer's on because you're streaming it with all your monitors, there's just that added, even if you do have it blocked off, there's that added thing if you're in your own work environment or in your normal work environment, so you just tend to drift into work.
Yes.
I think that's another part of it.
I think that's just a reality of things. But yeah, let's go ahead and get into it.
Are we ready to start?
Sure.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. So I'm going to say the other thing I realized as about the whole virtual conference versus in person is we never went to a lot of sessions when we went to the in-person conference. Like for us, the conference, Ignite, whatever it is, if I'm not giving a session, maybe I'll go in and sit in on a few of them, but I'm talking to those Ignite friends, those friends that I see once a year at the conferences. And truth be told, some of the sessions I end up in is because that's where all my friends are going. I give in to peer pressure, or we're just sitting there talking and everybody's like, hey, what session do you want to look at? Which one did you hear is interesting? And you'll get a group of you together and 15 or 20 of us will all go sit in a session together.
Yeah.
When you have the virtual conference, you're on your own. It's like, do I really want to comb through 800 sessions to try to figure out which one I want to sit in front of my computer and watch? It's just...
We need a like Twitch watch party or something.
Right. Like there's a whole component of that conference aspect that no matter how creative you get with a virtual conference, you just don't achieve the same feel, the same dynamics with a virtual conference. And that was the stuff I missed this year. Like I can only sit in front of my computer for so long, just watching 20 minute video after 20 minute video of information coming at me. And I really don't have the time to go sort through 800 sessions as much as I probably should, to figure out which ones I want to go watch.
Yeah. One area that I wish things would improve, particularly with Microsoft events, they're all, like if you've watched Build and Ignite and things like that, they're driven off of the same underlying platform. There's a kind of content management system that drives the entry of speaker profiles and tracks and, you know, how things get categorized, which is awesome. But the search it can be hit or miss sometimes, depending on if you're encapsulating things in quotes the right way. Like you got to be like a good power searcher to go in there and find the things that you're looking for. So as these events continue to become the reality, which they are, you know, like they already Ignite, I don't know if you saw, but they had announced Ignite 2021 in March.
I did not.
So there's going to be another Ignite in March of 2021. That's already coming up like very, very fast.
Yeah, that's like Build time frame usually. Isn't Build usually May?
I can't keep track of days anymore because I remember a couple weeks ago when I thought it was November already.
That's true.
I don't know.
Build is typically spring though. Like Ignite's always been fall. I did not catch that. So I'm assuming if they announced, I'm still on my announcements. If they announced it already for March, it's going to be another virtual in March?
Yes.
Oh, that's sad.
I didn't catch if it was a full Ignite or...
Like an Ignite the Tour type stuff?
Yeah, it's effectively like, if you think about Ignite being split into two halves, right? And kind of, you have that potential like next wave of announcements that comes over the next 6 months or so.
Yeah.
That's going to put you into March, yeah. So...
I was just searching for it a minute. We'll continue with its second half in March.
Yep.
Huh. That'll be interesting. But yeah, I know what you're saying about search. And I mean, some of this was a problem with in-person conferences too. But I saw one discussion, I think it was on Twitter the other day, of right after they announced SharePoint Syntex.
Syntex.
Yes. Everybody was like, oh, I want to go find more sessions about Syntex. So everybody starts searching Syntex. And everybody's
doesn't
like,
exist.
It doesn't exist. Why can't I find it? Where are these sessions? And finally, someone's like, go search for Project Cortex. When they created everything and indexed everything, it was still Cortex.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't make all those updates with the new naming, and thus nobody could find sessions because they were searching for the new name and it was still under the old name. I mean, that was a problem too with in-person, right? If you're going to do printed material, I know before though, it seemed like they updated the schedule builder live as these announcements were coming out, so it was easier to find them. I don't know what was different this year, but that type of stuff does make it hard to find sessions.
Yes. Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. So in the announcements that you were able to watch post our last recording, was there anything else that stuck out to you that jumped out at you that you saw? Other than we were completely wrong about Project Orbital.
Yes. I should have thought more about that one before we talked about it, because AWS does have a very similar service.
Well, to be fair, I sprung it on you completely out of the blue.
Yeah. So thanks for that.
Hey, anytime.
No, I think there was, you know, ultimately some good stuff that came out. I'd still like to dig a little bit more into it. For example, Azure Resource Mover, right? So having a hub to move a subset of resources, like when you say Azure Resource Mover, I go, oh, that's really cool. And that sounds awesome. And then you go and look at it and you read the documentation that gets released, you know, day of, and you're like, okay, wait, hold on. It can move VMs and VM resources like disks and NICs and
IP addresses
like that.
And
And it can do SQL databases and Azure SQL databases, that both regular and Elastic pools.
Okay.
And that's it. That's the list. So you go like, okay, hold on. Couldn't we already do all these things? And the answer was like, yes, you could with existing tools like ASR, right? Like let's use Azure Site Recovery or some of the built-in Azure SQL database recovery tools. So really what they've done is a hub has been built, right? Or kind of like a unified dashboard to wrap over those tools and put them together. So it's good to have the chance to go in and see like, what did they actually do and when does it make sense to do it? Because, you know, quite frankly, like an Azure Resource Mover service, like it's helpful, but it'd be nice if it moved things that other services, you know, weren't there for today.
Right.
Right. Like I want to move my app service from region A to region B. And yes, you know, it's easy enough to like retarget a deployment pipeline or whatever that is. But so it'll be interesting to see where some of those things go. So I was like kind of taking out the documentation afterwards and seeing how some of that stuff comes together.
To me, that feels like a lot of those Microsoft 365 announcements where it's like, you could do this in PowerShell for the last 2 months, and now we created a UI in the admin center for it. It's like,
which is all good.
Right.
Like
it definitely
bring on the incremental updates.
Yeah.
They need to be there.
And it opens it makes it a lot more attainable and usable for a lot of people, but it really isn't a huge announcement. It's just, we've made this easier, which like you said, all well and good, but I think sometimes that can lead to a little bit of a letdown from people that have done it the other way before.
Yes, yeah. But I think that's where it's easier to get excited about some of that stuff in person too, right? Because you might not be that interested in it, but other people around you are buzzing about it and going like, oh, isn't that, isn't this a great new thing that came? And then you go like, oh, maybe I should spend some more time on that or think about it a little bit more. So, you know, potentially you lose some of that context as well. So I thought Resource Mover was good to see. I think that certainly helps with a number of potential problems, right? Where you're a customer and you stand something up and you really don't know the impact of when you click the create button, like what does it mean to put it in a resource group in a region and things like that. Did you have any good ones? Like I know you've been doing a lot with Power Apps with customers lately. There were a bunch of announcements there.
Yeah, there were a bunch there. I need to go in and play with this. I was actually looking at this already with a customer this week, but the Project Oakdale, like that kind of hit tenants during Ignite. It was
just a little bit, right?
Yeah, just a touch. It was like, hey, here it is. It's there. And I went and searched my teams for the app and it is. It's like, sure enough, it's there. This one is one we're going to have to do a dedicated podcast to it once I have some time to dig into it. It's bizarre. There's a lot of, with that one, there's a lot of stuff to think about under the cover. So in the minimal playing that we did with it, it really is that whole concept of every time you create a new, it's not even when you create an own team, but like you create apps and each one of these apps gets its own environment and its own CDS database. So all of a sudden, you're starting to end up with all these environments in your Power Platform with all these CDS databases. Now start thinking about how you're going to secure this because it's not pinned to a specific, it doesn't have to be pinned to a specific team. Like you can have the same Power App with the same CDS database pinned as tabs in all within these various teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like you get up to 500 teams that can be associated with a single Power App, like an Oakdale Power App, and bring all that together. I was a little confused about, and I think an area that continues to be very confusing about Power Apps is licensing and how some of that comes together. Like particularly, one of the things I saw was along the lines of leveraging things like premium connectors. So there's some types of connectors that are free to use if you've created it through Oakdale, and they would be paid if you just went and created a regular Power App. And that continues to be really weird.
Right. Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. And that's where it starts getting really bizarre, because if you go in, so you go create all this stuff in Teams, like the only place to manage it is in Teams. If you kind of slip in the back door and go to like your admin.powerplatform.microsoft.com, stuff just, you won't see it. There's like a filter and all this stuff of, is my UI coming from Teams? Show this. If my UI is coming from the browser, show this. And it's, I mean, like from a management perspective and from a, I mean, even a security perspective, right? Because now you have apps in multiple teams, and technically there can be some data now moving between teams via CD assets. I need to go in and just create a bunch of these and start playing with security and really try to get a better handle on how all of this works and where stuff is. And like there's the own security settings now within the CDS database where it's a super stripped down version of what you would normally see in an environment with CDS, where you just have like users and teams, and there's a lot there. Make sure you understand it before you'd like just dive into this one head first.
Yeah. So if you are heavy in CDS, they do have an article out on Docs that is meant to act, I think, as a little bit of an FAQ around this. So it's called How Are Project Oakdale and Common Data Service Different? And it does that compare and contrast between the services. Because I think one of the things you potentially run into, like just from reading the documentation right off the bat, one of the things I noticed was they talk about tables a lot. And over in CDS, it's entities, right? You have an entity and then, you know, entities. Or you in Oakdale, you have a table or you have tables. And with an entity, you have fields, and that field can have field attributes. But in Oakdale, because it's a table, it's just a column. Or security is an interesting one. There is no field level security. There's no hierarchical security. There's no record sharing. There's no support for CMK. And there's no auditing on the Oakdale side.
Right.
But all that stuff does exist on the CDS side.
Like from what I've seen so far, it's either here's the database with the tables, you have access to it, or you don't. There aren't any other settings. It's security settings and then creating tables and columns. I think it's really good from the perspective of there were a lot of people that would create a lot of Power Apps that would use SharePoint lists as their backend driver. And obviously with SharePoint lists, there's some inherent problems if these apps start getting...
like one or two.
Right, yeah. If these apps start getting big. So I love where they're going with this. I think there's definitely a need for something like this, especially because Azure SQL is a premium connector. So at this point in time, if you wanted to do a free app without a premium connector and you needed a good backend table storage, I mean, SharePoint really was the only option without paying for premium connectors. I think. I mean, maybe you could have done something with like MySQL or some of those other databases, but
because a lot of that stuff, like you still fall in premium connectors because they're like HTTP calls, or you're trying to do REST calls or things like that. Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where this one goes, but it definitely, there's some stuff I need to go figure out there. So the other interesting one that caught my attention that I do not remember seeing anywhere in the Book of News or anything prior to Ignite, and the way it was presented by Teeper in his kind of keynote made me think this was their big announcement they were trying to keep quiet was Project, I think it was Project Nautilus.
Nucleus.
Nautilus, Nucleus, one of those NESs. But essentially offline SharePoint lists, as well as it looks like some ability for larger lists, like when you start thinking larger lists, think like 200,000 item lists, actually starting to work a little bit better. Maybe. I know there were some improvements there, but the whole concept of offline lists was intriguing. And this is another one of those. I saw the announcement. I saw some of the information about it. I have not had a chance to go dive into this one yet to see a lot of the details, nor do I think anybody actually has access to it yet. This is one of those, hey, it's coming, maybe we'll hear more about it in the second half. But this one's interesting.
Yeah, so my understanding of Nucleus and kind of some of the things that I saw about it and read about it, it's really it's not like a list-specific improvement or a team-specific thing. It's really an all-up SharePoint platform thing, which means it'll come to Teams in certain forms because lots of things inside of Teams are driven by information that lives in SharePoint, right?
Yep.
Files and lists and all these other things. So it's effectively a caching technology on the client side. So clients will get better at caching, and this is probably like an improvement on top of like PWAs, like progressive web apps or something like that along the way. You'll have optimizations around things like storage, right, for these files that potentially come from SharePoint or OneDrive. So you've got a more, I hate when things like this come out because, you know, like, hey, it's a more, it uses intelligence to sync. Like, no, it's got a better rules engine about what it keeps and doesn't keep. Like, there's nothing intelligent about the caching, right? There's probably an algorithm that drives it, but that's all built into, you know, the app and the caching mechanism. But yes, I mean, they called it out. They didn't call out a timeline for it, though, as I recall, either.
No.
It's just all about, like, all up investments in the SharePoint platform and Teams and Microsoft 365, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, this is entirely, if you go read through it, like you said, it's using an intelligent sync to a database to keep a cache on the client.
Yeah. I don't know what an intelligence sync is.
Right.
I know what
an algorithmic
being more sync. I know what being smarter about what you sync and don't sync or having optimizations around those things is. So we'll see.
Yeah. So the only thing that, like, I hear this and I'm like, great, offline lists. And then the only thing I can think of is caching on my device means more storage consumed on my device, especially if said device is a phone or a mobile device. Are you caching a portion of the list? Or, I mean, I'm guessing that's where some of the intelligence comes in, but now I'm syncing a 200,000 item list that I want offline, and I want, are you syncing all 200,000 items to my cache? I mean, that could get really big. Or if you're only
syncing, PWAs do have their limits, right?
Right. Like, if you're only syncing the most recent thing, is it really, I can take this list offline? Or is it more like a OneDrive sync type thing where I can take certain things offline and I'm doing a little bit, I mean, let's face it, OneDrive would probably be considered an intelligent sync with files on demand. That would probably, would classify that as an intelligent sync. Is it more like lists on demand, where if I'm on a plane, I can get to 20 items, but I can't get to 25? Like, how is all of that going to work because it's caching? And the reality is I'm not going to be able to cache every single list and all the items in every single list on my device all the time. And then you always run into the problem of, now everybody took this list offline, how am I going to resolve the merge when it comes time to merge everybody's changes in? And how are we going to handle sync conflicts because five people all changed the same field in my offline list? There's a lot of stuff I'm curious to see how this works.
You and everybody else.
So yeah, those are, well, I love the idea of it. Those are all the things that give me a little, I don't know, they make me nervous about how well this is actually going to work and when we're actually going to get it, because there's a lot there under the covers.
Yeah. I think the other one, and you kind of mentioned it in the beginning too, was syntax and some of the things around that, right? Like you talked about how it was hard to find those, you know, in the session catalog. But if you do go search for Cortex, you can find out more about syntax in there. So I did see some of the overviews around that, which look pretty cool and all that. I didn't catch anything around licensing for it. Did you?
I can't remember which site it was on. I don't believe it was on an official Microsoft site. I think it was on one of the news sites. And we'll go back.
Oh, well, that makes it real.
Right. We'll go back and try to link it. But it was a small upcharge pretty much to any plan.
Upcharge. Just a little add-on.
Yeah. And it was kind of vague. Like I said, it'll be a small upcharge to E3 and E5 plans, which made me think that essentially it's an add-on that you can add on to any of your plans. You don't have to be an E5 to get the add-on. Because some of those add-ons, you have to be at a certain license level to get it. It sounds like if you're E3 or E5, it is going to be an add-on to those based on what I saw.
Yeah. I mean, I saw one thing, like you said, on an offsite, it was on Forrester that talked about it being a per-user uplift or upcharge.
Okay, maybe that's the one I... Because you sent me that one, didn't you? I think that might be the one I saw it on.
Yeah. Like a $5 per user per month list price, but I didn't see anything like official about that.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything official there.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
This was another interesting one, but also comes at a bit of a hefty price. So have you seen the stuff that now with Teams you have, I don't have my link open anymore. Advanced Communication add-on. Advanced Communication add-on for Microsoft Teams. Have you seen this one?
I have not.
Okay, so get ready.
It's a new add-on.
It's a new add-on. So I saw some stuff trickle out of this before Ignite, and some of the Ignite announcements have now been said that certain ones, you also may need this advanced communication add-on. So what this advanced communication add-on does is, already on August 1, this is what you needed for live event support beyond 20,000 participants, 50 concurrent events, event durations of 16 hours per broadcast, compliant recording integration for ISVs, contact center solution integrated for ISVs. And later this year, this is what's going to bring interactive team meetings for up to 1,000 participants, interactive team meetings for 1,000 participants with the capability to enable up to 20,000 view only, and then a custom branded meeting lobby. So that's what's in it now. What I have also started to see, and I don't have a valid source for this, I can go see if I can find one, was that they made some announcements like around doing webinars in Teams where you can do registration, collecting emails, then have email follow-ups for webinars. So turning some of the Teams meeting and Teams live meeting into a bit more of a webinar type platform and some of that webinar functionality also is going to end up falling into this advanced communication. This is a $12 per user per month add-on.
Yes, it is.
The nice thing is...
I saw that. I was like, whew, that one's going to get up there.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing is this is a lot... These features are organizer-level features. So this isn't something you're going to have to go out and buy for all 5,000 users to take advantage of it. If you have your CEO or HR or marketing that is the organizer for all of your large company meetings and you want some of these features, this is only meeting organizers that will need a license for this to take advantage of these features.
Only organizers, not presenters and participants.
Correct. Is the way I read that. They only break it down into organizers and attendees. I'm assuming attendees are presenters. It's like that scheduler. The meeting scheduler needs the license.
Yeah. I wonder how does that compare? I've been looking at the, like the full breakdown of functionality and potentially like the APIs you get access to, but there's already been a bunch of other add-ons that exist in Teams. So you could do like the phone system add-on, and then you know, you have like ACP, like the audio conferencing packages and things like that. Do you like, you know, I got to go look at all that because it's weird. Like, do you buy that one or do you buy maybe those like other two or three and roll them together? And ultimately, like, where's the value?
Oh, you just keep adding on more and more.
Yeah.
There is no bundle. I can tell you, like, because of what I do, I have an E5. I have a Microsoft 365 E5 because I want everything. And then I start throwing out add-ins. I am getting really close to about the $100 per user per month charge for myself with everything lit up.
That's rough.
It does. It adds up because you do. The E5 is, what, 57-ish, I think. I can't remember what a Microsoft E5 is.
It's something like
so
that.
So it's 57. Yeah,
like the US like MSRP is it's up there.
And that one does include the audio conferencing or certain levels of it. I don't have the communication credits lit up, which gives you like dial out access and 800 numbers. So it's like 57 for the E5. It's another 12 for domestic calling. So I'm at 69. And then you throw advanced communication credits on, I'm up at 79.81. If I wanted to throw on international calling, I don't have international calling on. International calling is another 12 a month. So that would put me up to 93. And if you started throwing on communication credits, trying to think of other add-ons that are out there. I know when I go look at my licensing and the available add-ons, there's like 7 or 8 of them that I can add to an E5. Granted, some of those are like additional stream storage, additional SharePoint storage. Those make up like 4 or 5 of those. So those technically aren't a per user. They just have to be an add-on to an existing user, which gets really weird if you ever want to cancel that license.
Yeah.
But those are some other ones that are going to change because it sounds like the whole solution to Stream. This is another one we kind of talked about. We speculated as they kind of announced the V2 of Stream.
V3.
Or V3 of Stream, whatever. Well, yeah. But it was my Office 365 video and then Stream V1 and this is Stream V2 or V3. Their solution is essentially we're just going to store all your video files in SharePoint instead of...
Yeah.
In our,
it turns out it's coming back.
Yeah. I posted a tweet about that. I couldn't quite tell how that tweet got taken by some people. But yeah, it's essentially, it sounds like it's just coming back and all your videos are not going to get stored in SharePoint from at least from meeting recording and Stream. So I think Stream will still exist as Stream with some UI enhancements from the let's upload and host a video library. But meeting recordings are all going to get stored in SharePoint.
Which solves that whole external sharing thing.
Right.
That's one way to solve
that
it.
That is kind of, yes, that sounded like that was their solution. So those were some of my announcements, but I think you might have your hard stop here coming up soon. I just looked at the time.
Yes. Yes, yes, I do. Clocks are still a thing, even in COVID times.
That they are. They just run slower. Not really. I have no idea. They feel like they run slower.
And on that note...
Yes, I will let you go to your next meeting. I'm going to go get some work done, try to catch up on some of these announcements this week, and I need to see if any of these announcements impacted any of my presentations for next week. The joy of doing conferences right after Ignite.
Yeah, well, good luck to you.
Thanks. Enjoy your conference call and your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right,
thanks, bud. Bye, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.